Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 19th, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am very good. John El Capitan Martellaro, to be specific.
You know, I read that on your new business cards, and still, I didn't say it.
Yeah, Sorry about that. Thank you for doing those business cards for me. That was great.
Yeah.
I also got the plaque in my office.
Yeah, I'm glad that you like that. Yeah, that it's just something special. Yeah. Also special, we have a sponsor, lynda.com. And actually, I'm really glad that Lynda is our sponsor this week. I'm going to go ahead and talk about them right now because I'm just so excited about Lynda. So if you're not familiar with lynda.com, what they do is offer online video training that's absolutely fantastic. And it's training for an incredibly wide range of topics. I've talked about Photoshop before. I've talked about Lego before. Yeah, Lego Mindstorms robot programming. That's pretty cool. They have WordPress. They have business classes. They have design. They have coding classes. So if you want to learn Swift so that you can write programs for apps. Wow, that I'm old school. Programs. Wow. So you can write apps for the iPhone and the iPad and the Apple Watch or the Mac. You can learn how to do that from lynda.com. And the classes are designed so that they're easy to follow. They're taught by top experts in the respective fields. They have over 3,600 different titles right now, I believe. It's well over 3,000. I think it's about 3,600, maybe a little bit more even. And these are current and relevant. So as a class becomes outdated, then they just pull it and replace it with something newer, which I think is great. So it's not like you're going to jump in and get all schooled in how to do something really cool, only to find out that what you just learned, no one is using anymore. That would really suck. And it's just fantastic. Excellent training, taught by excellent people, easy to follow along. And everyone, I think, should give lynda.com a shake. Try it out. And they're making it easy for us to do that. If you go to their website, lynda.com/TDO, so that's lynda.com/TDO, then you can sign up for a 10-day free trial where you get access to every single title that they have, no restrictions at all. And go and do that. Learn something new and make yourself a better person, more well-rounded, a more awesomer person. And I just invented awesomer, and feel free to use it anytime you like. But first, go to their website, lynda.com/TDO, sign up for your 10-day free trial, and then let me know what you guys are learning. I would love to know.
I think so, they have a Swift class.
Yes, indeed, they do. Yeah. So, your phone rang. So first beer of the day is on John. Everyone, just remember that. Okay, lynda.com/TDO. Go check out what they have. Sign up for your 10-day free trial and get yourself smarter. Okay, now, John, once you're done spending all your time on the phone, there's something that I wanted to dive into with you. And this is the whole changing world, or what I'm perceiving as a changing world, of Apple. And one of the first things that really jumped out at me was when Apple included in the iOS 9 beta, the new iCloud Drive app, that first lets you look at the contents in your iCloud Drive much in the same way that you would in the Finder or you know, the way Dropbox lets you look at content. And that's a big change for iOS. But then also the way they put the app on iPhones. So it's there, but you don't see it. There's a toggle, a hidden setting. Well, not really hidden. It's in the iCloud settings where you toggle the switch and the app is suddenly visible. So we have Finder-ish access to content in our iCloud drives and the ability to have a built-in app visible or not. And that just seems like a huge change for Apple.
You know, I think it all started when Steve Dowling took over from Katie Cotton. Katie had been trained pretty thoroughly by Steve, and there's this sort of like a sea change with Steve Dowling and Tim Cook now. The company's much bigger. The company has a lot more customers. They have a lot more products. There has to be a little bit of change in thinking about how to support the customer and how to be more transparent with all the new features and complexities and products that Apple has. So I think this is a refreshing kind of change in the way things doing, the way Apple is doing things.
I agree. Now, this refreshing change, I would love to see Apple carry over into other aspects of iOS 9, meaning there are apps that Apple bundles that I cannot make go away that I will never, ever use.
Oh, the Siberian folder.
Yeah, mine's called Rurapente.
Say again?
Rurapente?
Not familiar.
So clearly you've never run afoul of the Klingons.
I've lost track of that reference.
It's the prison planet that Klingons send people to.
Oh, excellent choice. Excellent choice.
Yes. Anyhow, I have the Stocks app hiding in there because I'll never use that. I have Calendar hiding in there because on my iPhone I use Fantastical 2. And I have the Notes app tucked away in there because I use OmniFocus. There's several other apps that are tucked away in there.
Where we used to put Passbook before Apple Pay came along.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I don't need to see those apps. I would love for Apple to give us a setting so that we can make those apps invisible. And I know there's a lot of people that love to see those apps just simply go away. Like, give us the option to uninstall them. I don't think Apple will do that. But giving us an option to hide them makes sense. And one of the reasons I don't think Apple would do it is because, let's say you decided to make the web browser app, Safari, invisible. And then you've installed some other web browser on your iPhone and then delete it. If you have deleted Safari as well, you no longer have a way to get on the internet and surf web pages.
Sure, I think it's part of Murphy's Law. Apple wants to have a default situation where it's visible and available to people who may wonder where it is or are having trouble finding it. And if you really want to obscure it, you know how to do it.
Yeah. And anyhow, that's just one place where we're seeing a change. And I think it's a change for the better. We've also seen Apple become more responsive. And a perfect example is the way that they acknowledged the issues with Discovery D.
Oh, yes. You mentioned that you even saw a banner at WWDC.
Yeah, there's a banner hanging up at WWDC that said, "Sorry about Discovery D."
That's some serious humility.
Yes, but it's humility done in kind of a whimsical and fun way.
Yes, yes.
Which totally fits with Apple. Previously, I can't imagine Apple ever talking like that or making an acknowledgement like that.
Well, that's true. But it still goes back to the core problem, and that is slipstreaming in an OS release something that replaces a legacy and well-known Unix networking functionality. There has to be another intermediate step besides just dropping it into a release of 10.10 and hoping all goes well with millions of customers.
Yeah, so they'll need to work on that. And for people that are listening and you're sitting back and you're going, Discovery D, I didn't even know what that is. It's part of the whole networking code that Apple has for using Wi-Fi and making sure that your you're talking properly on the network. And previously they used a thing called MDNS responder. And they deprecated that with OS X Yosemite, and Discovery D became its replacement. And it's been buggy and unreliable, and it's caused a lot of networking issues for a lot of people. So Apple put up a big banner for developers saying, sorry about Discovery D. Now, we've also seen Apple responding to user feedback in a big way. But this isn't exactly new. One of the relatively recent-ish examples that comes to mind for me is the iPad mute hold switch. And do you remember when Apple changed the settings for what the switch did? And it was just across the board. And everyone freaked out. And then Apple does another software update, and they switched it back so it worked the way we wanted it to, but then gave us a setting so that we could switch between, is this a mute or is this a rotation lock?
Yeah, that was kind of a refreshing change too. I mean, it shows that Apple's listening. They're on the right wavelengths with the customers. That I really enjoyed seeing that change too. The other thing I'm enjoying is the more openness of Tim Cook and Phil Schiller. Recently, yes. Phil Schiller sat down in the mezzanine at WWDC with John Gruber from Daring Fireball. And while Phil Schiller didn't give away any corporate secrets, it was refreshing to see Phil sit down in public with a noted technical writer and kind of let his hair down and just chat about some things, laugh, and take some barbs from John, and to see how he responds. Some of his responses made your, one or two, made my heart sink. I was a little bit annoyed when he was talking about the rationale for the 16 gigabyte iPhone. But in other cases, he was fabulous when he was talking about the risk and the excitement of the MacBook and moving the technology forward and not just sitting around doing the same old thing with the same old ports and products. Mm-hmm. So that was nice to see. And I'm sure it's part of a Tim Cook sort of behind-the-scenes initiative to, you know, make the company more transparent. The other thing I've noticed is it's been really hard for Apple to keep its WWDC agenda a surprise and keep its new products development a surprise.
Do you really think that's hard, or is this by design?
Well, I think it's by design. I mean, for example, Apple did an intentional leak to let us know that there wouldn't be anything about the Apple TV at WWDC. And so good minds put together a list and said, well, this is what Apple pretty much has to talk about. And everybody pretty much nailed it. And we weren't expecting anything about the Apple TV. And so and we all knew that music was coming, right?
Right. Jeff Williams talked about some of the things that would be discussed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, like specifically, he said with iOS 9, Apple was going to talk about opening up all the sensors on the Apple Watch to developers.
Right, and we're pretty much sure, I think we're as sure as we can possibly be sure, that there is going to be a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, considering the leaks and the analysis of iOS 9 beta and seeing support for larger keyboards. And supply line rumors in the past. And I think the reason it's delayed is because a 12.9-inch iPad needs the features of iOS 9.
I don't think it's delayed at all. I think Apple just... we're not in Apple's product release cycle window yet for the bigger screen iPad.
Well, I disagree with you there. I think what happened was Apple decided that they were going to explore a larger iPad, and then somebody sat back and said, look, a 12-inch or 12.9-inch iPad is simply a large iPhone. It doesn't have any additional features that exploit its display, like slide-in and dual screen. So don't we really have to spruce up iOS 9 first. And then everybody went, yeah, we'll just continue tech development of the hardware, and then we'll marry them together in the fall of 2015. That's my theory.
I'm okay for us disagreeing on this one.
Okay.
Because what you're saying sounds totally plausible. And
it's totally right, too.
And I'm totally right. Anyhow, the other surprise interview that came up right around WWDC was Tim Cook. And he gave Christina Warren an impromptu interview. She had shown up at the special get together that Apple held for the WWDC scholarship tickets. So these are people that are in educational programs, and they got free passes to go to WWDC, which is great. And so they're going through their little special event and orientation, and then here comes Tim Cook. And so that was a surprise for everyone. And Christina just happened to be there for this event, and he was okay to talk with her. So they sat down and did a whole interview. That's not something that we would have seen before.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if maybe it's because Apple's size now and the breadth of their product line. It used to be when Apple was back around 2002, 3, 4, they were a $6 billion company. And now they're a $200 billion company. So 10 years ago when Apple came out with a startling new product like the Cube, which was a failure, or the Bondi iMac, which was a huge success, they could drop products on the customer base and we'd all be amazed and just snarf them up and be happy about it. But now Apple's got so many interoperable products, such an infrastructure, that it's really risky to come out with a radical product by surprise with no feedback from the public, no discussion, no intentional leaks, no kind of sizing up of the situation. So it could be just a product of a combination of Tim Cook's mentality and Apple's huge success and size.
Yep, it could be. And that is spilling over into other areas as well. I mean, Apple's been far more open about the way it's spending money for charities and other organizations. Tim Cook has been very outspoken about privacy and about equal rights.
Yes, indeed.
And these are not things that Apple would have done in the past. So anyhow, what I'm seeing is an Apple that is far more open and is making changes that seem to be, in many cases, good for customers.
Oh, we forgot about the public betas. Now we're getting betas
and
of iOS
betas.
8, 9, yeah. And Yosemite and El Capitan.
Right. Yes. El Capitan public beta will be available in July. So we're just a few weeks away from that. I'm looking forward to subjecting my MacBook Air to El Capitan and see how it holds up.
I'm going to wait for one more release.
I'm just going to jump right in. When that first public beta comes out, it's going right on my MacBook Air.
Yeah, the first developer release looked a little shaky. There were some issues there that could cause a problem on a mission-critical Mac. But I think the first public beta will be the time when I want to install it, too. Yeah,
I understand. Yep, I'm with you there. But I would never put this on a mission-critical Mac. Just because it's beta. And when Apple says beta, they really mean beta. Not like Google when they say beta and they're like, here, just use it. It's fine for everything. So anyhow, just my little word of advice for you, our listeners. Don't put beta software or beta operating systems on mission-critical machines.
I didn't mean to mislead anybody. I meant my MacBook is an experimental machine, actually.
No, I knew what you meant.
Mission-critical experimental machine.
There you go. No, I knew what you meant. But I also saw it as a great opportunity to give our listeners a PSA.
Sure, and that's great advice, Jeff.
Why, thank you. Hey, we're out of time.
Oh, no.
I know. So Yeah. Thank you for being here, John. It was great to have this discussion with you. I love exploring ideas like this with you because you have such great insight into Apple from when you spent some time working with them. And you're just so darn smart. So that's just really cool.
Aw, shucks.
Aw, shucks. And Lynda.com, thank you for being our sponsor today. It's so great that Lynda has been sponsoring us all week long. Head over to their website, lynda.com/TDO. Get yourself 10 days of free training, as much as you can pack into your beautiful little head. And then let me know just how smart you are. I'm interested to hear what people are learning about. Listeners, thank you for joining us again this week. We will see you on Monday.